Welcome to Elon Inc., Bloomberg's weekly podcast about Elon Musk. I'm your host, David Papadopoulos, and we are live at South by Southwest. For the uninitiated, Elon Inc. is the show where we discuss Elon Musk's corporate empire and how to make sense of his nonstop gambits and antics.
Well, Elon Musk is now the richest person on the planet.
More than half the satellites in space are owned and controlled by one man.
Well, he's a legitimate super genius. I mean, legitimate.
He says he's always voted for Democrats, but this year it will be different. He'll vote Republican.
There is a reason the U.S. government is so reliant on him.
Elon Musk is a scam artist, and he's done nothing.
Anything he does is fascinating to people.
Being here in Austin today, we'll dig into all things Elon in Texas. I'll let the man himself have the first word. This is Elon speaking back in 2022 with the Kilowatts YouTube channel.
We built the factory here in less time than it would have taken to get the permits in California. I loved living in California, but the problem is you cannot get things done. Ask anyone who's done a large project in California, how long would it take you to get the approval to proceed? 2 years and you're doing well. And like I said, we got this built in 18 months.
Since moving to Texas a few years ago, Elon has bought up swaths of land, built new factories and facilities for his companies, even weighed in on a local election, and we'll get into all of that. But Texas has had an impact on Elon too, and that is evident. Here we have him wearing a cowboy hat, maybe backwards. More on that hat later, but let me introduce our panel now. I'll start with one of our true regulars, Max Chafkin, senior reporter and editor at Business Week, and a man who is to this show what Norm is to Cheers.
Hey, David.
And then we have two special guests we brought in, Rachel Monroe, Texas and Southwest correspondent for The New Yorker. Hello, Rachel.
Hello.
And Sewell Chan, editor-in-chief at the Texas Tribune.
Hi, David.
Hello. All right, so an icebreaker to get things started. I want all of you, and I want you to think hard about this. I need you to rate Elon's Texanhood on a scale of 1 to 10, with 1 being a total utter imposter and 10 being a modern-day Sam Houston. Now, Sewell, you are a student of the history of Texas. We will start with you. And I'm writing down these answers, by the way.
Well, it's a loaded question, but I'd have to say 10, and here's why.
10.
You know, Texas is a state where people have often come to reimagine themselves, and Texas is often a canvas upon which people project their desires, their dreams, or their nightmares about what America is and should be. So in one sense, the richest person in the world moving here, buying up giant swaths of land, buying up a state park, building a giant factory in Austin and proclaiming himself a Texan is the most Texan thing he could do.
All right, very good. So we're going to jump more into that in 1 second, but we're going to get Rachel's number now. Rachel.
I'll give him an 8, honestly. Texas loves a businessman. Texas loves a huckster. Texas loves a billionaire with, like, unhinged political opinions.
Okay.
I'll ding him a couple points because of the hat. But
okay. So we have a 10 of an 8. Max.
5.
A 5.
Do I explain?
No, they're cheating. I mean, you will explain during the course of the show, but we will then turn to you, Max.
Okay.
And I will ask you, how did Elon, a native South African, become a Californian first and a very proud one at that, and then a couple.
Yeah, I mean, that clip is funny for me to watch as somebody who's covered him for a long time because, of course, like 10, 15 years ago, as you said, he was a proud Californian. It was like central to his identity. It was, in a lot of ways, his identity. One of the first things he ever said to me, like in like 2006 or 2007, when he was sort of talking up Tesla was, and I looked this up before we got on stage, I'm a Silicon Valley guy. I think people in Silicon Valley can do anything. And the central, premise was like this, Silicon Valley is good at software, but doesn't build hardware. I'm going to be the one to fix that. And of course, he had this kind of change of heart around 2020 during COVID, like many tech guys, I think, who simultaneously had huge capital gains windfall and were, I think, looking for ways to lower their tax liability, and also was very frustrated with lockdowns, and then began this kind of evolution that saw him move to Texas and, I think, you know, change kind of his whole persona.
All right. And Sewell, explain for us a little bit here the allure of Texas, a place that's long attracted libertarians and sorts like that.
Well, first of all, it's important to remember that Texas has always been conservative, but Texas has not always been Republican. And indeed, across the 20th century, California was largely Republican and Texas was largely Democratic. There were different parties back then, of course. But, you know, Texas, especially in the 20th century, an important thing, the majority of the population lives east of I-35, the easternmost third of the state. And the Texas Triangle, Houston, Dallas, Austin, has the vast majority of the population. So Texas is actually a pretty urbanized state. But the rural image and that frontier image, the cowboy, the rugged individualist, that became kind of Texas's defining identity in the 20th century.
So along those lines, Rachel, is this move to Texas for Elon, is this a branding thing, or is there more to it than that?
Well, you might also want to state the lack of a state income tax is,
to Max's point.
It's pretty huge, and Texas likes to think of itself as a very business-friendly state. And, I mean, I think you've seen that in his experience here in terms of, like, the clip that you all played in terms of the regulation. I mean, what's been able to happen with SpaceX here has happened really quickly, sort of alarmingly quickly. But I think that... and then I think there's something fun about there's a certain kind of performative masculinity and the cowboy image. I mean, Elon's not the only guy that we're seeing that put on the hat and the boots and
Max had threatened to come up on stage with a hat on, but then, you know.
Well, it's also, you know, he's good at a few different things. You know, he's a really good, you know, manager of engineers. He's a good marketer. He's also very good at getting municipalities, local governments, and even national governments to write him gigantic checks or to, you know, cut him enormous tax breaks.
And by the way, similar to the way he does it with investors, right? I mean, investors have been handing him lots of money for years.
And it's really good if you want to, you know, extract a tax break out of a governor or a mayor or whatever, to be a little flexible about your identity, to be willing, essentially, to embrace a new identity. You know, when he was a proud Californian, of course, part of what he was doing was reviving the NUMMI factory. This is the main Tesla factory in Fremont, California, that he got for very little money, that essentially took over this GM-Toyota joint venture. And you know, coming to Texas, he's been able to extract some, I believe, some pretty significant tax breaks. And he's done this all over the world, right? In China, in Germany. It's like a big part of what he does is, like, find a way to sort of fit himself into policymakers' agenda and get paid for it.
All right. You're slightly jumping the shark on me here. We're going to get into that in a minute. Let me ask you this, though, because I do know, I believe, and you were very excited, you saw your first Cybertruck ever yesterday.
I did. And it looked, it sort of fit in. It's they're so big, but you know, maybe the scale, you know, here is a little more forgiving.
Now those trucks are made right here in Texas. Do we believe his move here is part and parcel of the rollout of this Cybertruck and trying to find an audience, buyer's demand for that vehicle?
Well, that's kind of what I thought. I guess I don't know, 8-9 months ago. Because of course pickup trucks are like the most popular cars, you know, in the United States. Like this Cybertruck could, in theory, be, you know, a much, much bigger hit than, you know, the Model 3 or the Model S, the two sedans. The problem is they haven't been able to make them. So like he's going through all this trouble of like wearing the cowboy hat and like, you know, affecting a new Texas identity. And they're only making, you know, very small quantity of Cybertrucks. Probably, you know, there's probably enough people in Westchester or, you know, the New York suburbs to buy Cybertrucks at the current production level. Although, you know, maybe down the road, like you could imagine this identity helping him connect with like a large segment of car buyers. I do think there are some problems with that. Just that, you know, the kind of far right-wing signaling, I don't necessarily think is helpful, even for conservative people, even for Republicans, even for, you know, the most Texans of Texans.
Rachel, you've talked a little bit with me before about Elon's star power and the star power that he brings to Texas. What does that look like? And does that star power, you know, does it matter in any meaningful way?
I talked to a person that I know the other day who is the only person I know who's friends with Elon. And I was just sort of asking him, I was like, what's the deal? Like, does this work out there in the scene? And he was like, oh, yes. No, it's very embarrassing. The billionaires out there, you would think that once you were a billionaire, you would get over this. But people are still like, oh, yeah, no, I went with E to this. There's still a lot of swooning. Still a lot of deference. There's still a lot of like laughing at his jokes, even when they aren't funny. So I guess it, you know, but this is like within a cohort that I think is like his cohort that has come to Texas with him, whether that travels kind of outside that bubble, I think is less clear.
That includes like members of the PayPal mafia, the people who've settled in West Austin.
Yeah, exactly. The sort of new Austin tech scene.
I was just wondering, like, who is the, because when he lived in California, you know, he's sort of hanging with the Hollywood scene. You know, he married twice, actually, married an actress, kind of a Hollywood starlet. He, you know, he sort of enjoyed that part of his identity. What is the Austin equivalent of that? Is it Joe Rogan or like what's
Joe Rogan and Alex Jones? Is that the best that we've got? I don't think so. I don't like to think that that's true, but I mean, from what I hear, there's just like a lot of sort of like private enclaves, and that's sort of the scene that's happening here. It's not a lot of like cross pollination with the kind of broader Austin community.
Okay, so before we segue a bit into the next segment, I want to, as a transition there, I want to, Sue, I'll start with you, and I'll ask you this question, and the others can chime in. What actually is Elon's ideology nowadays, if we have any sense? Is he a libertarian? Is he more right-wing, sort of law and order guy? He likes to say that he's pretty much a centrist and everyone else has moved left. Any sense of where he stands and at this current time?
I think like a lot of people who've moved rightward, you know, Elon Musk is fundamentally annoyed by what 30 years ago was called political correctness or now wokeism. Whether you agree with that critique or not, I think it's one that he's really glommed onto. He's obviously become a free speech absolutist. I would say his orientation is mostly libertarian. He tends to talk more about speech issues than about low tax, low regulation, low government services, which is really the Texas economic model.
MAGA. I mean, his ideology is the ideology of Donald Trump.
Because Trump is surging in polls ahead of Biden or for other reasons?
I think partly because MAGAism or whatever you want to call it is politically salient and is, you know, popular with a large portion of the United States. Also, I mean, of course, like Donald Trump and Elon Musk have a lot in common, right? They're both kind of like libertarian inclined businessmen who are really interested in, as Sewell says, you know, saying what they want when they want. And there's even, you know, I think psychically some kind of connection. They're both given to these like, you know, kind of grand pronouncements. They both have this feeling that they can kind of speak something into existence just by saying it very forcefully. So I think it's that simple. I think his ideology is the ideology of the Trump movement.
It's interesting to me that he seems to really think of himself as a contrarian and as a maverick of some kinds. But when you look at, you know, particularly the recent things that he's been saying about immigration, which is a lot of kind of reiteration.
Hey, Rachel, let me just interrupt you for just 1 second. We actually have some tape of him at the border speaking on this very topic.
So here we are at Eagle Pass, and we're going to be meeting with the sort of major officials and law enforcement responsible for the border.
The reality is that this is an open border for all of Earth.
All of Earth.
And just, you know, so there's roughly 350 million people in the U.S., but there's 8 billion people on Earth.
Yes.
This is an open border to 8 billion people.
Yes.
So can I ask a question, though? I mean, at what point does Elon the capitalist run up against Elon the social media personality? I mean, someone running a global company wants a stable, large base of consumers.
I think it's arguably happening.
He feels he gets that under Trump?
I mean, I think he's... Like Tesla, there are big questions about why is there not more demand? You know, why has demand seemed to slow down? You know, one explanation is that he's turned people off. I also think that Musk is on Twitter all day, every day, and feels intuitively, rightly or wrongly, that there's something behind this. And that's what he's attacking. But of course, they're, you know, large and very sophisticated investors who would disagree with that. I think he's making a huge mistake.
I mean, it's just interesting to me as a person who's been to Eagle Pass many times. I mean, first, like, important to say that how divorced this is from reality. But again, it's like these aren't sort of like edgy contrarian opinions. This is like very standard kind of like Fox News divorced dad talking points. Like, this is, you know, what you could, and it's interesting to me hearing you talk about him in California. I wonder if he's actually just much more of like a permeable person to his environment than he thinks. Like, his idea of himself
is a contrarian. We've talked about this in the past, but there's a certain chameleon sort of aspect to him, no?
Max? Yeah, well, absolutely. I mean, he, during the Bush years, the George W. Bush years, when he was just getting started, he kind of framed the companies in libertarian terms. During the Obama years, he was a green capitalist. He presented as a centrist, kind of somebody very much in line with Obama. I think he actually personally likes Obama quite a lot. And then during Trump, you know, he shifted again. So I think he's somebody who, who's pretty chameleonic politically. And also, as Sewell said, you know, Silicon Valley has not historically been a liberal enclave. Like, Silicon Valley is like Defense Department, right, military. It was like a right of center place. So I think you could, and I think there is some quality of some of the tech guys who moved, who sort of missed the, like, you know, Silicon Valley of the 70s and 80s. And you know, maybe Elon is part of that, even if they were kind of very small during that time. But they at least miss it on some psychological level.
Back to the border and back to his fixation on immigration and these topics. What has his impact been, Sewell, on local politics?
Well, let me start with the state level. So, you know, immigration is the biggest issue for Texans, and it's one reason why the state Republican Party continues to exert such a dominant hold on the state. But a lot of the local issues here that have been the most divisive actually are less about the border and more about things like privatization of the school system, or very local issues like our attorney general, who is under indictment and was impeached by the Texas House. And so there's kind of a civil war going on within the Republican Party that I don't think Elon is really part of. He did, however, recently take a position against Austin's district attorney, who is a Democrat, who was running for re-election, and he urged people to vote for the primary challenger, who was more centrist. And he kind of portrayed the DA as kind of a Soros-backed prosecutor. But it was an intervention that came in way too late, and the DA...
So is that what went wrong here, that he just simply jumped in too late, that you can't rush in at the 11th hour and try to tip an election?
Well, it's that, and simply he also doesn't have much of a huge political voice here yet, right? I mean, as his workforce here grows, that might change.
I was just also remembering that a few years earlier that Austin had a thing on the ballot, Proposition A, which was to would have mandated, I think, something like for every 10 Austinites, there needed to be a police officer. It was just sort of like a boosting police, you know, law and order kind of ballot that he tweeted in favor of. This was right after he had moved here. That also was like soundly defeated. So I think there's a way in which he's not at Travis County. Austin has been votes pretty liberal, votes pretty progressive, and whatever sway he has isn't nearly enough to, I mean, the progressive incumbent that you're talking about, Sewell, like won by, you know, an enormous margin.
Is that right?
Yeah.
So, right, for someone who's leaving California and woke California for Texas, I mean, in some ways, Austin is indeed sort of an odd choice, no? Within Texas?
Well, they all love living here because they want the culture of a thriving, you know, metropolis, like diverse place with good culture where, you know, people who make interesting things live. So, you know, that's, but they also like think that, oh, you can come here and not pay the taxes, but get the kind of cultural capital of a place like this.
That's right. And Austin is sometimes described as like the border city between blue and red America, because you only have to go like 10 minutes outside the city and you're pretty, you can hit Trump country really fast. And a lot of the people who've come here, like Musk, they stay in these gated communities that are actually pretty, they're kind of on the west toward the lakes, and they're a little bit kind of outside the kind of downtown vibe that you're getting here at South By.
Max, we believe he's got a place both here in Austin and a place somewhere else. Is in Boca Chica, is that right?
Yeah. Famously, when he moved, Elon Musk is given to like these theatrical, you know, it's kind of one of the things that makes him successful. He said he was selling all his homes. He had some large number.
In the Isaacson book, that was a big part of it.
Yeah, seven or something.
I'm purging all my homes.
And he rents this little tiny house. I think Rachel has been there in Boca Chica, Texas. And then there's also, he stays somewhere, as Sewell said, in a nice part of the Austin suburbs, I believe.
I have not been in his house, just to clarify.
So he sold Bel Air, he sold the Silicon Valley house.
Supposedly he kept one house.
Wasn't it under pressure from one of his kids?
I don't know, but he said it was the events house. I don't know. I guess like when you're that rich and run that many companies, you need an events house. So so I don't know. I mean, I do think he... When you can look at his the Elon Jet account, which is this account that you know, much to his dismay, like tracks his travel. And I mean, you can see he spends a lot. He spends time here. I mean, he's a guy who's sort of everywhere and nowhere, like many rich people. But he is spending quite a lot of time, I think, in Boca Chica, which is, you know, on the border or close to the border near the SpaceX factory, and then here in Austin.
Okay, so. If so far it looks like he's not having a huge impact on local politics, his arrival in Texas and his takeover of Twitter, turning it into X, his constant presence there, is he his seeming embrace of Donald Trump now, is he having, or do we expect him to have a meaningful impact on national politics in this election year 2024? I'll start with you, Max, and we'll let the others who jump in.
Well, we are about to drop an episode on this, or I guess if you're listening, it'll be a couple days earlier, but on Donald Trump and Elon. So people may be aware that there was this meeting, you know, in Palm Beach or West Palm Beach between Elon Musk and Donald Trump. There's some suggestion, I guess, that Musk might donate money to Trump's campaign, which could really use the money. And then there is his sort of power as a media figure, as like essentially like a new age Fox News or a Fox News on steroids, right? I mean, Tucker Carlson, his main distribution platform right now is X. Tucker still, even though he's not on Fox, still has a big fan base. So I think there's some potential there. I do think there's this problem for Musk, which is that, you know, Twitter, and people in this room will be aware of this, Twitter is not real life. And I think, like, those of us who spend time in digital spaces are continually reminded of that. And I think, you know, this endorsement that didn't go that well is yet another instance of that. Like, you can be tricked by social media into thinking that you are more popular than you really are. And I think if you're going to critique Elon Musk, that would be, you know, a critique.
Got it.
I mean, I think it's true that Twitter is not real life, thank God. But also, I do think that it's a way, particularly with the issues of immigration and the border, so many people do not live anywhere near the border. I live like 70 miles from the border. So this he's playing into this idea of creating an image in people's mind of what happens at the border, which becomes this hugely salient national issue that isn't actually impacting most people in any way, or is it maybe impacting them in like positive economic ways that they don't see, but he can sort of feed this idea of the chaos.
So Rachel, do you want to jump in, Sewell?
Really quickly, far more undocumented immigrants are people who flew into this country and overstayed their visas than crossed the border. But you wouldn't knowing that listening to his rhetoric. That said, does he affect swing voters in Michigan and Wisconsin? I doubt it.
We shall see. I want to stay though along the border for a second. At this point, Musk, between SpaceX, between Tesla, between Boring, Musk Inc. has a large, fairly large presence here in Texas. In Boca Chica, along the border with Mexico, is perhaps one of the biggest spots, or maybe the biggest spot, where they have their spaceport. You've reported on this. You've been there. Give us a little bit of a sense of what life is like there in Boca Chica and how it's been affected by Elon Musk and SpaceX's arrival.
So Boca Chica is a very tiny little community outside Brownsville, right, kind of on the beach where the Rio Grande flows into the Gulf of Mexico, so the very tip of Texas. And when I first went down there in 2019, it's sort of like beach bungalow style, like retirees on fixed incomes. Like there was seashell art kind of type of grandma scene. And Elon Musk went down there to sort of build these facilities for SpaceX. I mean, it's interesting because I live in West Texas where I live. It's very relatively close to where Blue Origin is. So Jeff Bezos buys like they're everywhere. Jeff Bezos buys hundreds of thousands of acres of land, right? You can't see anything that he's doing. Sometimes we would drive out and watch the launches and they're just like a little dot happening there. But okay. SpaceX was doing
this. You're right on top of it.
It's like it was crazy to go down there. They built the rockets before they built any buildings to build the rockets in. So you were just with the sea air and sometimes the road was like washing out when the tides went a certain way. I mean, it was crazy to me that they were doing it, and people there would just kind of come out and stare and watch, and you could watch these rockets being built. And so for a little while, I think it felt like a paradise for people out there because this thing was happening. But, I mean, a paradise and a hell.
Several years later, what do they make of it?
So all those houses were sort of, he got kind of a sneaky deal that was able to get possession of those houses through eminent domain, which, you know, of course, is supposed to be for things that are like for the public good, like power lines.
Is going to Mars not for the public good, Rachel?
I guess it is what is going to save humanity. So I can think of no higher cause.
They were eminent domained out.
They were eminent domained out. You know, the beach is closed down. The houses is one thing, but it's important to talk about the beach there. This is a poor area of Texas. This is like one of the poorest metro areas in the United States. This beach it's one of the last undeveloped beaches in Texas. People described it to me with a lot of pride and affection as the poor people's beach. You know, you don't have to pay for parking. You go out there with your grandma and you fish. Texas has an open beaches law. Like we are sort of proud of our beaches and our access to our beaches. It's not like California in that way. However, SpaceX has this like special grandfathered in situation that they've worked out with the county there so they can close the beach. And so now it's just sort of become a private enclave. It's also right near all this, you know, protected wildlife land. And it was just this area that they kind of moved into, had a little spot, and then have just grown to take it over and kind
of. Along those lines, so you guys at the Texas Tribune have reported some on a proposed land swap between SpaceX and the state that would allow SpaceX to both hand over some land for protection elsewhere and take on more land there in Boca Chica.
So basically, under this land swap, SpaceX would acquire basically what's currently a state park. And that pretty much shows you, and it's actually abuts a national wildlife refuge. So it's an ecologically sensitive area, a lot of biodiversity. And the fact that this deal is kind of moving forward actually says something, I think, powerful about how eager Texas governments are to kind of accommodate his wishes.
And you guys have encountered, from what I believe I saw, a similar sort of sense of, hey, we're being essentially, we, the local community, and in part in a Hispanic community, we're being bigfooted out. Is that?
Oh, absolutely. And you're also seeing that in one other big area in Texas, which is Bastrop County, right near Austin, where Musk, as the Wall Street Journal reported, is kind of acquiring these huge, huge swaths of land. And now, of course, he's talking about building a private university. And even a few weeks ago, it was reported, potentially a new a private Montessori-style school system.
But I guess the counterargument might be that this is, I will ask the question, is this some form of NIMBYism? If not here, no one's going to want the spaceport, Max, to show up. I mean, do you want the spaceport in, half a mile from your house?
Well, listen, I live very close to LaGuardia Airport, and so I'm very copacetic about, aircraft landing and taking off near my house. But I do understand that rockets are somewhat louder, I think,
a little louder
than 737s.
And there's debris goes everywhere, yes.
Musk, I think, has said that there are very few places where you can launch rockets. You need to be equatorial. He wanted it to be in the United States. It sort of leaves not a lot of options. But like Sewell's saying,
right?
Like,
he wanted to be basically as south as possible, and sort of where they could launch east, right?
And so I think that's right. And you probably want to be somewhere where a little debris falls. You know, it's not going to take out homes. But I do think while Sewell was talking, I was thinking about it's not just the Texas government, it's not just, you know, I guess like Republican politicians right now are eager to please Musk. I mean, he has power even over Democrats, right? Like even Joe Biden, Musk is really mad at Joe Biden because like Joe Biden like snubbed him at an event and he's got like some
beef. Biden held an EV convention, didn't invite Musk.
The thing is like, you know, even under Biden, even under the guy that he despises and called him a sock puppet, you know, he's maintained his contracts. He's even gotten more contracts. And when you look at like what the federal government, even the federal government under Democrats have done to Musk, it's not a whole lot. It's like some enforcement actions and so on, but the contracts, the stuff that really matters, has stayed. Because, and I think the argument that some, policymakers make is essentially that, you know, the U.S. government needs this guy. Like, he is the leading industrialist, better or worse.
Is he too big to fail?
Yeah, I mean, that's the essence of it, right? That this country needs him too much, that he's too big to push around. I think there are questions about that, right? I mean, maybe the companies are too big to fail. You could imagine a situation where the federal government went after Musk personally in a big way. But again, it's very hard to separate Musk from his companies.
All right, so I want to ask that along those lines, and his economic might and the economic might he's bringing to Texas. And I'm wondering how much it matters. I mean, world leaders in Turkey, India, everybody, you know, France, you know, try to woo his business. And I wonder just how big a deal it is for Texas, a state that, you know, ironically, for someone, you know, who's the biggest driver of the EV revolution here in the U.S., Texas is a state that produces almost 6 million barrels of oil a day. That's almost $400 million every single day that comes out of the ground. Does Musk matter? Does his arrival matter much to Texas as an economic engine, or is it?
Well, you know, it's important to also remember that Texas is the number one producer of wind in the United States and the number two producer of solar. So there is an energy revolution happening, and there is an acceleration of the energy transition happening here, even though the state government remains really dominated by petrochemical and kind of fossil fuel companies. But I actually do think, look, the myth of Texas as an untamed frontier is just that. It's a myth. Yes, there's a lot of land, but there's also a lot of Texas that's pretty densely populated and pretty urbanized, as I said. But I do think that the EV revolution speaks to this energy transition, even if it's one that's not explicitly supported by the state.
I need to hop over to the next question because we're going to move on to our last segment in a second. This is usually the time of the show, just so you guys know, where the editors and producers start yelling at me that I gotta pick it up. So, but they're not here in my ear, so I'm sort of unplugged. And going at my own pace. But Rachel, I do know in chatting with you that, you know, some of Elon's lieutenants who came here to Texas with him from California as part of, hey, you know, we're going to go change Texas and we're going to enjoy the libertarian streak in Texas. They have, some of them have since moved on. Is that right?
Yeah. And I don't know specifically if these are Elon's lieutenants specifically, right? But I think, you know, just this sort of tech world that came in 2020, came to Texas sort of seeing it as this low tax, low regulation paradise. I know that at least some of them are getting fed up. I think not having the political sway that they wanted. Housing prices are actually like extremely high here.
Do housing prices matter for them?
I mean, I think if you're sort of fantasizing about your cheap paradise, it's not quite that. And right. I'm sure they're seeing the downstream effect, you know, from their employees.
Yeah,
the summers are
brutal.
People are leaving for Miami. People are going back to California. You know, people bought these enormous houses and now they're selling their enormous houses. So, the lesson we could all learn, your problems follow you wherever you are. You know, you don't get to solve all your problems by just moving to Austin. So
the problem is not the like world movers. Like, they have private jets. If you have a private jet, no problem.
Yeah, you're good.
It's their entourage that does not have a private jet,
yeah.
would very much like to buy a house, send their kids to school, and so on. And like, when you're talking about these Elon Musk, right, potentially trying to hire hundreds, thousands, even tens of thousands of people, like, those costs start to add up. And you start to, there's like a trade-off between this, like, yeah. gigantic workforce, tech workforce in Silicon Valley, and high costs. And that gigantic workforce that's still in California, I think, is an important attraction.
Yeah, jump into a brief.
Well, there are a couple of things that could threaten the Texas economic boom, right? One is the energy usage. We had a near fatal. Hundreds of people died, but a near complete, almost state blackout about three years ago. And then second, I actually think the social legislation is going to start having an impact on the ability to attract and retain human capital. You know, this is a state where abortion is now criminal with no exceptions, including rape or incest. Obviously, all the stuff around transgender care being prohibited for minors. And I think it's starting, not right away, but it's starting to have an impact on Texas's ability to retain highly skilled employees who are going to be necessary to work for these companies.
Okay. We're going to end the sort of more serious part, and we're going to go to our last segment, which we're going to have fun in this last Max, we're going to have fun in this last segment, whether you like it or not. And we're going to put up either some photos for you guys to look at, or we're going to play some audio. And then, you know, I need you guys to judge and rate the, you know, the whether this constitute Texas behavior, Texan behavior or not. So let's get the first picture up. Oh, we're back to the hat. Okay, the hat. So my question is for all of you, and then the audience is going to chime in here. Max, is the hat on the right way?
So, okay, first of all, I don't know. Because I'm from New York, and
I've never worn a cowboy hat in your life.
I went down a Reddit rabbit hole on this, there are diverging views. Some people argue, I think,
right.
and I'm summarizing, and there are probably people in the audience who may know better than me, that is actually a style that may
oh, yes.
look like a hat that just came out of a box and was put on backwards. In fact, it is a hat that just came out of the box but was put on the
he
right way.
He knew exactly what he was doing.
He looks like that on purpose.
That's the argument.
Okay.
Kind of worse.
And so wait a minute. You seem to buy that. You're going with it. It's on the right way.
I think it's on the right way.
Okay.
It just looks like he hasn't worn it
okay.
a whole lot.
Rachel.
So you know, hard for me to say.
We probably should have had a true born and raised Texan
there
up
is,
here on the stage to answer these questions.
There is a gentleman in the crowd who okay. is wearing
just,
a hat, and maybe he could
no,
weigh
let's
in.
Just yeah, so for the
I
audience.
Would say, I would say the I would say a wider brim. And a more tan color is what you more typically see. But again, there's
okay.
a lot of self-fashioning
right.
going on
okay.
here.
So from the audience, I need to hear it from you if you think the hat is on the right way. Okay, so is it on the wrong way? Okay, all right, so he's 0 for 1. Okay, next up.
We say all hat and no cattle is a good way
that's
to insult
right.
somebody. So that's kind of like all it's cattle and
no
hat,
hat
is sort
well,
of
but,
the vibe.
I just... Okay.
But by
I
the way, it's better to have the cattle than the hat, I gotta say.
I think I feel the need to say because, you know, this is under the aegis of Bloomberg, that Elon Musk actually responded to this critique on Twitter, said he'd own the hat for 10 years,
okay.
it is not a new hat.
There's no
he's
way.
Maintaining
There's no way.
That this is okay. all, he knows exactly what he's doing.
He's just okay. never gone outside in the hat then.
But all right, so
it's okay to disagree on this.
So podcast. Then the boots, he's got these cowboy, can you see the cowboy boots on? He's got the cowboy boots on as he sits down with India's Modi here. Matt, I don't know, Matt, is this Texas behavior or not, Matt? When you sit down with the leader of India, are those the cowboy boots you wear?
I think it's cool. I don't know.
You can wear a formal boot for sure. I authorize it.
Yeah, it's hard to see the leather work from here, but for sure it's business appropriate.
Okay, we're gonna go right to the next clip, which is an audio clip.
I know. I think there's like that pizza restaurant, that pizza chain that's they got the best ice cream sundae that I've ever seen. It's a giant one.
Out here?
Buca di Beppo's.
Oh yeah.
They've got a gigantic ice cream sundae.
Everything they have is gigantic.
Yeah. It's amazing.
Oh, bro, they have that rigatoni oh, wow. with the meat sauce, and oh, my God.
Buca di Beppo's is great.
It's fantastic.
Yeah.
And it's very reasonably priced for the amount of food you get.
Okay, so Rachel, is this the way two Texans talk about food? Because, you know, Texans are very, you know, proud of their food, and there's a strong food culture here. Is this the way two Texans talk
about
food?
I mean, maybe it's actually really savvy. He's not wading into the Austin versus San Antonio breakfast taco debate. Oh. He's not taking a side. Buca di Beppo, nobody's going to get excited. Nobody's going to get that mad.
Oh, so it's safe.
You know, so it's the safe, you know.
And it also shows like an every
mall choice.
Like an every man sort of quality, right? You know, I go to Buca di Beppo's, right?
Yeah. I it's weird, so I like it.
Weird, so you like it.
I, you know, on this podcast, I don't know, other people may have listened, but Rogan talks, you know, at great length and with some authority, I'd say, about the food scene in Austin. And this is what Elon offers, which just, I mean, I think it suggests that he hasn't gotten out a whole lot.
Well, wasn't it during his early days, like at what would be PayPal and all that, didn't they basically just eat the same thing? Some iteration of Soylent day in and day out.
Yeah, I mean, when you're building the future, right, and when you're working in this extremely hardcore way, you know, things fall by the wayside, and you need a gigantic, face-size portion of spaghetti and meatballs.
Okay, Sewell, do you like the rigatoni at Buca di Beppo's? Got no idea. All right, we got one more that's going to play right now.
My little buttercup, when you stay a while. When you stay a while. Come with me where moonbeams meet the sky. And you and I will walk the by on by on by. Well, this is really winning.
So that was Elon and his brother Kimball right here at South by Southwest 6 years ago. Max, when you hear that, does that sound like Texas to you? Oh, but by the way, he was still a Californian at the time. That's the issue.
Yeah, I think this kind of makes Sewell's point for him, right?
He would sing it way better now.
This is a cover from the Three Amigos, I believe.
Does anybody in the audience know what that is?
I think that's what this is. That's Elon's brother, Kimball.
Right.
You know, props for puting himself out there.
Do either of you want to touch that?
It's a music town, and so he should probably
when
leave,
in Rome.
Maybe.
Oh, okay.
The classic phrase for people who are newly arrived in Texas is, I'm not from here, but I got here as fast as I could. And there's this phenomenon of people moving to Texas who then see themselves and project themselves as being more Texan than Texas. You might be seeing some of that here in a premonition kind of way.
So to wrap up, I want to go back to the beginning. And at the very beginning, Sewell, you assigned Musk a 10. Basically, he's essentially as Texan as Sam Houston to you. And then you gave him an 8. And then Max, who's a tough SOB, gave him a 5. Do any of you want to change your votes? Your rating.
It's either a 10 or a 1, right? There's not much in between.
I see. It's one of those. But you're staying with 10. You're not changing the 1. Everyone else is good. So I'm going to ask, and by the way, I happen to know the right answer, of which I will tell you later. But I'm going to ask the audience, you know, you're going to get two options here. The first option is 5 or lower. So I need to hear if you're going to give Musk a 5 or lower as a Texan. I need to hear from you, and then the other will be 6 and up. So who says 5 or lower? All right.
Solid.
All right, solid. Tougher crowd than up here. How about a 6 or more? It's pretty even draw, which actually does happen to be the right answer, because the right answer is 4.7. And so they...
Max won.
And they, in being split like that, they pretty much nailed it. I think we are out of time, but this was terrific. So let's end it there. A big thanks to our panelists, Max, Rachel. And
to the audience.
And to the audience for joining us.
Thank you
all for joining us for this special episode of Elon Inc. at South by Southwest. Keep listening in each and every week.
Thank you.